The following programming is sponsored by the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Hello, and welcome to Positively Pro-Life Podcast. Positively Pro-Life is brought to you by the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation and aims to bring you inspirational stories and conversation, important legislative updates, and informative interviews as we seek to restore and strengthen a culture of life. I'm your host, Bremer Tenney, Education Director at the Federation, and I'm joined as always by Maria Gallagher, Acting Executive Director. Welcome, Maria, to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Remel. It's great to be with you today.
It is good as always. Now, in a few weeks, the abortion pill will once again be taking center stage in the fight against abortion. Chemical abortions consist of a two-pill regimen. The first pill, mifepristone, blocks off the supply of nourishment to the baby in the womb. And the second pill, misoprostol, aids the expulsion of the baby from the woman's body. While the abortion industry loves to tout about the safety and efficacy of the abortion pill, the women who have been victims of this abortion procedure are coming forward with their stories describing their heart-wrenching experiences that have left them traumatized for life. The FDA's removal of restrictions in accessing this medication is once again in the spotlight, with Alliance Defending Freedom representing the case that is currently pending oral arguments and a decision in the Supreme Court. Our guest interview today is with Alliance Defending Freedom, but before we dive into that, let's hear Maria's update for the week.
Thank you so much, Remel. The following is from an article by Randall K. O'Bannon of National Right to Life. After threatening for over a year, Walgreens and CVS, two of the nation's top pharmacy chains, are slated to begin filling prescriptions for mifepristone at selected stores in selected states sometime in the next few weeks, the chains announced Friday, March 1st. Walgreens said it would start dispensing abortion pills from stores in New York, Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, California, and Illinois within a week. CVS said its stores in Massachusetts and Rhode Island would be selling the pills before the end of March. Eventually, the chains say they plan to extend sales to other states where abortion pills are legal, though which states meet this qualification for CVS and Walgreens is unclear at this point. Please contact Walgreens and CVS and let them know you oppose the selling of the dangerous abortion pills in their stores. For more information, contact us through our website at www.paprolife.org. Remel.
Thank you, Maria. I'm really glad that today we get to talk about the fight on a national level as well. So today we are speaking with Gabriella McIntyre, who serves as a legal counsel for Alliance Defending Freedom's Center for Life. And our conversation today will be about the abortion pill in the FDA versus Alliance of Hippocratic Medicine case. Gabriella joined Alliance Defending Freedom in 2023, prior to which she was an associate at a boutique firm in Washington, D.C., where her practice focused primarily on life sciences patent litigation, FDA regulatory issues, and multi-district commercial litigation. In that role, she managed discovery internally and across joint defense groups, conducted motions practice, and analyzed and distilled complex and often very technical issues. We're looking forward to this conversation with her about the abortion pill. This is the fight of our times. And so without further ado, welcome Gabriella to Positively Pro-Life.
Thanks so much for having me.
So to start us off, could you explain the mission of Alliance Defending Freedom? What do you do there?
Absolutely. So we're a legal advocacy firm, and we seek to protect our God-given First Amendment freedoms. So we're dedicated to protecting things like religious freedom, free speech, marriage and family, parental rights, and then my center, or my group, the sanctity of life. And we're an alliance, so that also means we partner alongside our clients and other volunteers in the community who want to see to it that religious freedom thrives.
That's tremendous. Now, can you give us a run through of the lawsuit and where it is right now?
And I'll give you a little bit of background first, too, to orient us. So the FDA approved the chemical abortion drug mifepristone in 2000. And when it did so, it recognized that abortion drugs were high risk. And so it attached several safety standards that the agency itself said were essential for the health and safety of women who are taking these drugs. And we are challenging FDA because in two different actions in 2016 and in 2021, it stripped away those critical safeguards. So now the regime is a woman or a girl could get these abortion drugs, these high-risk abortion drugs, via the mail or even a retail pharmacy and take them at home alone or in her dorm room alone without ever having seen a doctor in person to screen for things like ectopic pregnancy or to shepherd her through the process and ensure there are no severe side effects from taking the drug. And that's just reckless. The FDA should be held to a higher standard than that, and its actions were unlawful. And we're challenging them to ensure that we're maintaining the safety of women and girls. They deserve better.
So just to backtrack a little bit, you mentioned that the abortion pill was classified as a high-risk drug. Can you tell us why that was? Put in, please.
Absolutely. So mifepristone, the abortion drug that we're talking about, has serious risks associated with taking it according to the condition, the labeled conditions of use. So women and girls have suffered and continue to suffer when they take this abortion drug, severe and even life-threatening complications from taking it. So things like severe bleeding, incomplete abortion. You know, some of the times the abortion drugs don't work, and so you have retained fetal tissue or pregnancy tissue that must be dispelled via surgical means. Also, misruptured ectopic pregnancies. If you don't know that you have a pregnancy in the tube, the abortion drugs are not going to end that pregnancy. And so you can have severe complications coming from not being able to detect that from that in-person doctor visit. And then also severe infection like sepsis and even death in some instances. And that's not to mention any of the emotional trauma that some of these women experience. Our doctors have seen some of these complications and this trauma firsthand. Some women come to the emergency room and they didn't know that they would see their baby. They didn't know the kind of pain and bleeding and severe things that they would experience from taking this drug. And it's hard to imagine in that instance that these women had been able to give informed consent. And the FDA's own label actually acknowledges that roughly one in 25 women who take these abortion drugs are going to end up in the emergency room by taking them according to their labeled conditions of use. And that's just egregious.
It is appalling. Now, does the FDA have the authority to remove these safeguards in the first place?
If it does so according to the law and according to proper protocol, and it did not do so here. So the FDA did an about face on its opinion that these safeguards were vital based on data and studies that it itself acknowledged were insufficient and inadequate to make those determinations. They also removed numerous interrelated safeguards without any studies examining how those changes as a whole were going to affect women's health, or even why looking at those kinds of studies was going to be unnecessary. Administrative agencies like the FDA are held to a higher standard than that. The FDA's own governing statute, the FDCA, holds it to a higher standard than that, as well as the Administrative Procedure Act. And quite frankly, FDA's actions here were unlawful and reckless. Because it did not follow those proper protocols.
You're saying a little bit more that in the news, especially in the pro-life news, the channels, that the FDA did have information that this pill was putting women's safety at risk. So in what ways did the FDA fail to really uphold the safety?
Just by nature of taking away these safeguards. So to give you a couple of examples of some of these safety standards that it stripped away all at once, when it first approved the drug, you needed an in-person doctor visit before taking these drugs, as I mentioned, to screen for contraindications like ectopic pregnancy and other sorts of severe bleeding or other life-threatening infections. They also required the drug to be prescribed by a physician and dispensed by that physician, who could then shepherd the woman through the process and take care of some of these severe and life-threatening complications if they did arise. They also limited the gestational age to 7 or less weeks because anything after that exponentially increased the risks to the mother. And they required prescribing doctors to report any serious complications from taking these drugs. In 2016, the FDA removed those safeguards without actually explaining why it was safe to do so. It, again, relied on studies that it itself stated were insufficient for the purposes that it was looking at them for. It never looked at these changes as a whole or the interrelated compounding effects of taking away multiple of these things. So it reduced care for women to only one in-person doctor visit in 2016. So that removed the in-person checkup for potentially life-threatening complications. They increased the gestational age threshold, despite the data stating that it increases risks, and it eliminated the in-person reporting requirement. And then in 2021, it went one step further by eliminating that remaining in-person office visit and eventually allowing these high-risk drugs to be dispensed by mail. So now, again, as I mentioned earlier, you have women and girls who are potentially in their own homes or dorm rooms taking these high-risk and oftentimes very emotionally traumatic drugs without ever having visited a doctor in person.
Is there a little-known fact about the case that the mainstream press simply hasn't covered?
Maybe it's a little less of a little known fact and more just misinformation, but the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, which is a well-respected organization in this field, actually states that 1% of women who take these drugs is going to end up experiencing those severe side effects or end up in the ER, and that's absolutely not true. Again, as I mentioned before, the FDA's own label states that roughly 1 in 25 women who take this drug, according to the labeled conditions of use, are going to end up in the emergency room. And that's with the in-person doctor visit. FDA's own studies that it cited in 2021 actually state that those risks exponentially increase when you remove that in-person doctor visit. And then, you know, it's just absolutely reckless to characterize these risks in that way. FDA also states that, you know, these drugs are just as safe as Tylenol. But again, that is an egregious misstatement. Tylenol, you only experience adverse effects from Tylenol when you misuse Tylenol. Again, the label for FDA states that, or excuse me, the label for these abortion drugs states that roughly 1 in 25 women will end up in the hospital when they take the drugs according to how they're supposed to be taken.
Those are things that I feel like even we don't really talk about much because in aware of the one to the first. What Samia shared earlier this on the episode about the is seeing that the abortion pill is now going to be dispensed at pharmacies in Pennsylvania through Walgreens. Now, they claim that there are protocols set in place surrounding the prescription and that there will be training for the pharmacists, and only certain certified pharmacists can actually hand them out at these pharmacies. But do you think a ruling of the abortion pill at the Supreme Court would affect this?
It will. So just kind of as a summary, we challenged the permanent removal, or at least one of the things we challenged was the permanent removal of the in-person dispensing requirement, which served really as the only impediment to retail pharmacy dispensing. The pharmacy certification requirement is contingent on the removal of that in-person dispensing requirement. So if the Supreme Court does effectively reinstate that in-person dispensing requirement, by necessity, these pharmacies will not be able to dispense the drug.
You know, I'm thinking there is a danger that the abortion pill could be used by human traffickers or other abusers to violate women. Is that a fear that you share?
Absolutely, and it's a fear that our doctors share. You know, there's doctors who have declared in our case that, you know, their care for their patients includes ensuring that they're making medical decisions free of coercion. You know, many trafficked women are going to experience unintended pregnancies. And alert doctors are the only resource to intervene for a lot of those women on behalf of those women. So removing that in-person medical interaction with a doctor removes the opportunity to identify and rescue these women. And it also leaves them at risk of being coerced into an abortion that they may not desire.
The Supreme Court, where we, in the lawsuit, I had mentioned that there would be oral hearings soon, and that there would be a decision, an impending decision later this year. So do you have a timeline on when that would be?
Yeah, it's hard to tell exactly, but the arguments are happening on the 26th of this month, March 26th. And so it's a little late in the oral argument calendar. So we could probably expect most likely the last week of June to get a decision from the Supreme Court. That would be my best guess.
Gabriella, can you give us some idea? You are in a unique position of fighting for life. How did you come to hold your beliefs on life? Did you always have them, or was there a transition for you, or how did that occur?
My beliefs on life are rooted in my sincere religious beliefs, which I've always had, but I don't think I really came to realize them until I became an adult and these sorts of issues came to the forefront. And that's one of the reasons why when a position opened up at the Center for Life at Alliance Defending Freedom, I felt very much moved by the Spirit to join and to make sure that women are receiving truth about these things. Because again, this case is about women's health. And no matter what side of the abortion debate you're on, I think everyone should be able to agree that women deserve better than what they're getting right now. And so you hear these things happening and it really ignites, I think, beliefs that you've always held, but hadn't really come to the forefront yet.
And I imagine it must be very traumatic for a woman to take this abortion pill and to see her deceased child and have to deal with that. I mean, that's not something that you run into every day of the week. Can you talk to that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, our doctors, as I mentioned earlier, they have seen that as one of the things that they see when a woman comes to the ER after having taken these abortion drugs. She did not expect to see her unborn child, their fingers and their toes, their testimonies are just so powerful. And the way the current FDA regime is, these women are not able to, or a lot of the time don't have the information that they need to make an informed decision about whether to take these high risk drugs. Not having the in-person care and continuing in-person care of a doctor makes that even less likely that a woman is going to make these decisions in an informed way and know what all of the risks are going to be, including the emotional trauma that comes from taking these chemical abortion drugs.
It's wonderful that we have no lives that is fighting this. So can you just tell us the names? I mean, like who are the people you're representing?
Sure, absolutely. Yes. So we're representing hospitals and medical associations, one of which is the named plaintiff Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine, as well as other associations and also some named doctors. And so those doctors are the ones who are on the front lines and they are seeing these things happen, point blank from their first person point of view. And their testimony is very powerful.
Now, I have a question about, so if a woman goes through this process and she is traumatized, can she, this is just off the top of my head, I was just curious, can she in any way hold the FDA responsible at this point? Or is that why this is that why you have an alliance and you have this case up in the Supreme Court level? Or is it possible for like an individual to also do that?
Well, it's difficult to say, mainly because a lot of women who experience these life-threatening complications and some of these adverse side effects from taking these abortion drugs likely don't even know that it's because of the FDA stripping away of these safeguards that has put them at that higher risk. So how would a woman know to even go after the FDA, for example, for that? Hopefully in the future, if these safeguards are reinstated, there would be recourse for a woman to to sue her doctor potentially for medical malpractice if they didn't follow the risk evaluation and mitigation strategy that's put in place. But yeah, it would be very difficult for a woman who is going through this traumatic event to know that it's from the stripping away of these safeguards.
And I'm thinking that a lot of people are under the false impression that women need these drugs for their health and safety and for their lives, to save their lives. But it's the exact opposite, isn't it?
Well, I can speak to, you know, the fact that these are high risk. These are high risk drugs, absolutely. And women's health is jeopardized when they're not receiving the in-person care that they need. So for FDA to, or for anyone to promulgate the theory that women's health is served by the stripping away of these safeguards and making them, making these abortion drugs, quote unquote, more accessible, which again, this case is not about access to abortion. It's about women's health. But yeah, women's health is jeopardized by not receiving this in-person care that they need. So it's definitely false to say that the stripping away of these safeguards is for women's health. That's absolutely not true.
There's certain irony in the fact that sometimes the abortion side says, oftentimes they say that pregnancy can be a very complicated process. Like it could be life-threatening to the woman, and so she needs access to abortions. But over here, we're seeing the experts that we trust, right, are removing these safeguards and putting women's health, jeopardizing their health at a time when, in an unnatural way, that too, right? And how would you address that? Is that something that you talk about when you are addressing the abortion pill?
Could you repeat that? I cut out in the last couple of seconds there.
Could you repeat the question, Rimmel?
Okay, I think I lost the internet here. That's...
Rimmel, could you repeat the question, please?
Yes, I was just thinking. Right now the fight is about putting women at risk, right? And there is this idea that pregnancy is the one that puts women at risk and it can be life-threatening. Now, there is an irony in that, and you are fighting that. So I was just wondering, is that something that you bring up that is safer for a woman to continue with her pregnancy than to put her in, than to jeopardize her safety? Is that an argument that you have?
Yeah, well, it's absolutely untrue that pregnancy is more... there's more of a risk of continuing a pregnancy than there is with taking these chemical abortion drugs. Again, these are high risk drugs. And these are common sense safeguards that were taken away. FDA's actions are making these high risk drugs even more high risk for women who take them. And so that is definitely something to consider. Obviously, that, you know, there are risks associated with taking this drug the way that you're supposed to take this drug. And FDA's own actions are jeopardizing women even further by putting them in situations where they're not receiving the in-person care of a doctor, and they are not being screened for ectopic pregnancies and other contraindications. And FDA, quite frankly, is relying on emergency room doctors and states that it's relying on emergency room doctors and hospitalists like our clients to be the backstop for those complications that these women are going to experience. Again, the label states 1 in 25 women roughly will end up in the ER after taking these high-risk abortion drugs.
There's also a question and concern that people are raising that by restricting access to the abortion pill, this would not help in cases of miscarriages because, while I was reading about it, it talks about how the abortion pill is sometimes used in miscarriage management. Now, does that cause an effect? Does the Supreme Court's ruling or decision have an effect on that aspect?
Not at all. So this case is not going to affect access to abortion. This case is only about women's health and FDA's stripping away of those safeguards for women who already have access to the abortion drugs. So this will not affect that, no.
In the couple of minutes we have left, can you explain, I'm not clear on why would the FDA remove the safeguards? I mean, if if they cause so many problems, potential health hazards for women, why would they do that? Was it basically they were kowtowing to the abortion industry, or what was going on there?
Honestly, a great question. The changes are obviously brought up by the sponsor of the drug, which is Danco Laboratories, and they're the ones who are intervening in this case. And so when they brought this up, FDA, they looked at the studies and agreed that the studies were insufficient, or stated the studies were insufficient. They didn't look at the cumulative effects of removing these safeguards, and they did so anyway. So regardless of what FDA's motivations were here, their actions were unlawful.
It's just incredible. And we look to the FDA to keep us safe. And if they're not following through on that pledge to us, then we have serious questions, obviously, about what they do on a given day-to-day basis.
Absolutely. It's FDA's duty. You hit the nail on the head. It's FDA's duty to keep us safe. And when they flout their responsibility and their duty, it calls into question the efficacy of the administrative agencies. That's the reason why we have these rules in place. It's the reason why the Administrative Procedure Act provides an avenue for us to challenge this agency action.
In the minute we have left, do you have any final thoughts for us on this case or on your involvement in it?
I would just stress again, this case is about women's health. And holding FDA accountable for flouting its duties to protect women and girls when they're taking high-risk abortion drugs. And if you want to learn more about this case, there's a lot more information in some of the filings themselves at adflegal.org. And you can visit our website and see some of those as well if you're interested.
And I recommend that listeners do that because it's important for us to be informed on this issue. This is a prime issue of our day, and we need to be educated about it. So I want to thank you, Gabriella McIntyre, legal counsel for Alliance Defending Freedom Center for Life, for our conversation today.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure to have you with us today. Positively Pro-Life is made possible through the generous support of the members of the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation all across the Commonwealth. The Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation is the largest single-issue pro-life organization in the Keystone State, with nearly 40 local county-based chapters. We shine a spotlight on the most vulnerable individuals, from the very dawn of life to the twilight of life. Thank you for joining us for the program today. It wouldn't be the same without you. We are grateful for your support, and remember, there's always a reason to choose life.